The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
I don't want to burden you with my personal problems, Ursula.
No. Well, what would stop you today?
Well, here's what's going on. So we're tidying things up at the house.
Uh-huh.
We're going to have a bunch of guests in the next couple of weeks. And my wife sees a pair of shoes that's unopened. And I remember, oh, a friend of mine gave me these shoes. And I opened the box, and they were really nice-looking shoes.
Uh-huh.
And so this morning, I thought, well, I'll wear these. They're nice-looking. They're brand new to me. And I'll wear them into the radio station. They have disintegrated. I've never seen anything like this in my life.
There was quite the commotion in the newsroom earlier today, and I was running because Brock was laughing hysterically, and he was yanking at your feet, and I was like, what is he doing giving you a massage? So I'm running over there with my phone wanting to take video. What was going on?
The soles on both shoes have now fallen off. The little rubber pellets that provided the padding between the sole and my foot, they are all over the newsroom. Every step I take, I'm leaving a trail of rubber. And
pretty soon it's just going to be your bare feet with the top of the shoes.
I fear that I'm going to have to go out to my car wearing nothing but socks this afternoon because my shoes have completely disintegrated. I've never seen anything like this in my entire life.
Apparently they weren't so new.
Well, I guess.
Or they're just cheaply made.
It's a nice gift by my friend who gave them to me, that's for sure. So anyway, that's what I'm dealing with. I have some footwear problems, but I don't want you to be dissuaded from thinking this is going to be a great show, because it is. And we start with an exclusive story that we've been working on all weekend.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
So the details of what happened at this Nordic Heritage Museum gala over the weekend are quite remarkable. And I have three sources now that have confirmed this story for me. We have reached out to the subject of the story, and that's Seattle City Councilman Mike O'Brien, and Chris Martin is producing for us today. And Chris, what efforts have you made to reach Councilman O'Brien today? Your mic. Get your mic on.
Oh, there we go. I wrote and called his office and also talked to the or have a call in with the Seattle City Council media person, but no response.
Okay. And you told them what we were going to be talking about.
Yeah, and at first I didn't say it was for you. I just said Cairo Radio.
Well, I'm Cairo Radio.
He's trying to increase the chances of someone actually contemplating coming on the air.
So so I will tell you, according to these sources, and I do have at least three sources who have confirmed the details of what went down. Now, first of all, let me tell you a little bit about the Nordic Heritage Museum. The closest elementary school to my house when I was growing up on the mean streets of Ballard was Webster Elementary, there on 67th between 32nd and 34th. And so I went to Webster for a few years, and then Webster closed, and it became the home of the Nordic Heritage Museum, which is a fine tribute to Ballard's rich Scandinavian history. They have undergone all of this fundraising, and they thought, we need a bigger home, we need a newer home. And this weekend, it was the gala grand opening of the brand new Nordic Heritage Museum on Market Street in Ballard.
In the heart of Ballard.
Yes. And so here was the problem. At the Friday night gala, they had room for about 350 people in the main hall, but apparently about 600 people showed up.
Wow.
Big overflow crowd. And there was royalty there, royal families from different Scandinavian nations. The president of Iceland was there. They were engaged in a ribbon cutting. And that's when things started to get really crazy. And I have confirmed this with the management of an organization called Pacific Fishermen, which is a big maritime business right there on Salmon Bay, on the waterway there, by Ballard. And what they tell me is that as the overflow crowd had to go into an adjacent facility at Pacific fishermen. After the dinners, they invited the $100,000 donors to this Nordic Heritage Museum. And apparently there were several people who donated six figures.
Wow.
And so they donated the $100,000 donors to the shipyard. And one of the people among that group was Seattle City Councilman Mike O'Brien, who apparently, I'm guessing he didn't give $100,000, but the city of Seattle, they bought some of the land that the Nordic Heritage Museum is on, and I think that that qualified a city official for being part of this six-figure gala welcoming event. Well, what I'm told by management of this organization is that they saw Mike O'Brien there, and he's part of this effort. They want to limit access to their business by street closure, and they want to trisect their property by covering an alley and converting it to a major truck route, and that it's going to have a major negative impact on their business. And as management of a private company, they said, well, here's Mike O'Brien, and he's working to hurt our business, so we don't want him here. And also, I will tell you, this was about 9 p.m. now, Friday night. A band requested by the Princess of Denmark began to play. And that's when this Pacific Fisherman Shipyard management saw Mike O'Brien there. Given that he is engaged in political efforts that management believes will severely harm, if not destroy, their business and the other maritime businesses along the waterfront, they said, hey, this is private property. We don't want you here. And they told Mike O'Brien to leave. We cannot confirm that Mike O'Brien was drunk, but several witnesses did see Mike O'Brien spill his drink as he was being escorted out. One person described to me the look on his face as one of a functional idiot similar to Mad Magazine's Alfred E. Newman. This is a description I was given. I wasn't there. I said, is Mike O'Brien a functional idiot? They said, no. He looked like the functional idiot Alfred E. Newman. We can neither confirm nor deny that he is a functional idiot. But that is the exact phrase that was relayed to me by some of the people involved in kicking Mike O'Brien out.
That's quite the description.
And then, Ursula, at one point, as Mike O'Brien's wife was also being escorted out, she loudly yelled out, according to two witnesses that I have talked to, she loudly yelled out, F the fishermen! But she said the entire F word.
Mm.
Actually, I believe three separate sources told me that part. So Mike O'Brien was once again informed he was trespassing on their private property, and he had to be forcibly escorted out of the event.
Boy, he's had a rough week in Ballard.
Sounds a little self-inflicted to me. And how classy if indeed at a fisherman maritime business, if his wife, as a couple of sources have said, screamed out, F the fishermen. Now, I want to say, I have gotten this from multiple sources, including principals in management at the business in question. But as Chris just told you, we have done everything to try to get Mike O'Brien's side of the story. I want to give him the opportunity to tell his side. So we have called his office. We have written his office. We have called the Seattle City Council's general media person. And once again, Mike O'Brien, for whatever reason, is choosing to not present his side of the story. But given the number of sources that I have on the other side of the story. I don't know that Mike O'Brien can refute this. There are too many people who saw it.
The anger, though, that they have toward Mike O'Brien is has nothing to do with the anger that was unleashed on him earlier in the week regarding decisions that he's made regarding the homeless. So this was an entirely different
thing.
This is
separate from the homelessness issue.
Yes.
This is that the maritime businesses believe that Mike O'Brien, and he's working with the Cascade Bicycle Club and that whole issue. They're trying to get some of these maritime businesses shut down. They want them out of business. And what this comes down to is this: they have this vision that Ballard will eventually become bicycle only, that it will become the first, like Davis, California, a college town. They have this vision that will get rid of all the working maritime businesses, these 100-plus-year-old blue-collar job businesses, and what they want is condos all along the Ballard waterfront. They want to boot out all of these marine industry businesses, and Mike O'Brien is, they believe, the business believes that he has a plan that would involve reducing the access of their trucks to get in and out, and it would trisect their business, and that it would have a massively deleterious effect.
I mean,
on
the
their
fishing
business.
Industry and the history. I mean, that's so much of Ballard's history. I mean, that's so much of what makes Ballard.
It is Ballard. Ballard was a fishing community. It was a logging community. And those jobs are among the ones still where you can, without a college degree, you can go to work for some of these businesses. And I knew guys who went up and fished in Alaska during their summers at Ballard High School. In between junior and senior year, they would go up and they would make a fortune. And it's just an area where people, blue collar, maybe they're not on the college track, but they can still make a decent living in these maritime businesses. But then you have, and I've seen the documents, the Cascade Bicycle Club is very involved in this PR campaign. They're working with developers to get rid of the maritime businesses and put in hotels and apartments and condos. And they have a vision that we're going to get rid of all of old Ballard, and we are going to create a community in our image. And their image is a bunch of yuppie bike riders who can ride their bicycle to Amazon and Expedia and make six figures in the tech industry and ride their bike home, and we'll get rid of all the cars in the area, and the maritime bedrock industries will be gone. And, of course, it will continue to force out the middle class in Seattle as well. So that is the story from over the weekend. I was shocked when I heard it. That's why I had to multiple source it, that Mike O'Brien spilled a drink as he was being escorted out, and Mike O'Brien's wife screamed out, F the fisherman. According to my sources, we have made several efforts to Mike O'Brien's office and to the Seattle City Council to try to get their side of this story. But once again, it is a sign that if you think the people who are in charge now, if they can't even hold their liquor at a Friday night gala, do you really think they can solve the homelessness issue? Do you really think they can help turn around the crisis that faces this city and this entire region? Do you really think giving them more money? We're already spending $200 million a year in Seattle and King County on homelessness, and their answer is give us $75 million more. We're already spending more than any city in the country on homelessness. Now let's spend a lot more than any other city in the country. That's their solution to absolutely everything. And on it goes. Just this absolute nightmare of the Seattle City Council, and in particular, Mike O'Brien, who he's a tough one to figure out. And then he went on Q13 this weekend. He'll talk with Q13. He'll talk with my friend Brandy. What does Brandy have that I don't have, Ursula?
Well, a few things, but
what? What does Brandy have?
You know what? Maybe she has a different tone than you do.
Maybe she doesn't take all of Mike O'Brien's quotes out of context like me either. Because Mike O'Brien said this on Q13 this weekend.
I'm not making an environment specifically for dicks.
So that was one of the things I noticed that Mike O'Brien was talking about there. Let's see here. Oh, hold on. I have some breaking news here. What do we got here, Chris? I'm just being handed...
From the communications from Dow Constantine's
office. This is the other listener exclusive we have. Okay, I'm going to have to get to this one in a second. Here, let me hear just a little bit more from Mike O'Brien this weekend on Q13.
If we could, you know, pick a handful of businesses that just say, we're going to exempt them from everything because we love them so much, you know, Dick's would probably be on that list for most of us.
Okay. So he did talk to Brandy over there at Q13. Yeah, we got some other breaking news that I'll get to you in a few minutes. I just got an update on something else, another listener tip that we've been given. One other story that I want to get to here in the Big Lead, and we got a lot of stuff for you today. I've been telling you, last week I told you that we have a brand new nickname for Jenny Durkin. It was based on John Madden on Thanksgiving back in the day.
This is a turducken right here, where we got, you know what a turducken is? A turducken, this thing here, is a deboned duck stuffed in a deboned chicken stuffed in a deboned turkey. With stuffing, now you're talking.
Okay, so spineless creatures make up a turducken. And I thought, well, that kind of sums up Jenny Durkin, who's been pretty spineless in how she handles everything. So instead of a turducken, we're just calling Jenny Durkin Duckin' Durkin. And we had some examples, like when she was asked, do you support the head tax or not?
I don't think that we can make this a digital yes, no, my way or the highway.
Duckin' Durkin! How about a yes or no, though, Jenny?
Fundamentally, are you for a tax on large businesses in Seattle?
I think I've answered the question. It's not a yes or no question.
Duckin' Durkin!
So it's a real direct question. Are you in favor of it or against it as it stands now?
It's a direct question with a long answer. I sent a 4-page letter that I think you've seen.
But it's a yes or no. It's a kind of a yes or no answer right now.
It's not a yes or no. We have a variety of issues that we have concerns with.
Duckin' Durkin.
Turducken.
No, Duckin' Durkin.
Turducken.
No. Oh, anyway, that is your Big Lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
We need a little levity amidst all the madness of city politics here. Let's see what's going on with the Seahawks. Brock Heward is the Monday Monster quarterback, and he's going to join us next as the Dory Monster Show gets rolling, start of a new week. Well, it is Monday afternoon, and that, of course, means that it's time for the Monday Monster quarterback, and that is the great Brock Heward from 710 ESPN Seattle. Good start to a good week to you, sir.
Oh, what a weekend. What a weekend we had. Some brilliant baseball. The rookies were there. Minicamp was going. Pete Carroll's infused with newness. He can't wait to get started, Dory. We got so much to actually do today.
Of all the things you mentioned, you left out the biggest part of the weekend right there.
Justify a two-length lead as they come to the final 16. Good magic on the outside. A second audible third toward the inside. Then it's still regard. They're coming to the wire. Just awesome! Justify has won the Kentucky Derby!
And come on, Brock. 2 hours before the Kentucky Derby, I jump on Twitter. I tell everybody that Justify looks tough to beat. Mm. And then I tell them, here are the horses I'm going to box for second and third place. $100 investment returns $757. Free money just sitting out there if you follow me on Twitter.
And? Did you hear from some peeps?
A couple people said thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you think about texting me?
Well, I thought you followed me on Twitter.
I do.
Well, why didn't you just make the bet down there?
I don't know. Did it feel good?
It felt really good.
Were you confident? Were you super confident? When you put something like out there, you're kind of like Molina, right? The catcher there. You're kind of putting it out there. You're kind of exposing yourself.
Put it out there, all right.
Yes.
I liked being right on Twitter more than I liked the money.
Yes.
Yeah. racist. As you might imagine with me.
Yeah, I'm being right.
Okay, let's talk about some of the Seahawks stuff that's going on. Because they had their, the rookies, the draft picks came in. And I know that you had a chance to talk to Pete Carroll a couple of times over the weekend.
Yeah, we did. We did on Friday. It was nice. First time, really, in a long time, Dory. He went away, man. Him and John and the rest of the crew,
yeah,
in that month of January, they disappeared. They reappeared at the Combine. They spoke to John Clayton and the national audience. And then they went back into their cave. They got and did all their work for the draft and free agency. And this was our first time in about 4 months to catch up with Coach. He was energized, as he always is. He had some juice, and I think more than anything, I think he's trying to turn the page from the last couple of years where things got away from him.
Well, without question. And so, no doubt, he's a little disappointed that Earl Thomas could have showed up this weekend. It's voluntary stuff, but Earl Thomas, who's approaching the last year of his contract, scheduled to make how much?
$8.5 million
this next season, and Earl Thomas was not there.
We'll find out. They got to communicate that phase two doesn't look like it's suiting them right now, you know. And so we'll see. We'll see what's happening. Phase three is around the corner for us, so we'll see. We got one more week of phase two. Earl had a fantastic offseason, and I know he knows how to get in shape. And you know, veterans sometimes look at those rules and they see voluntary, and they see it differently than other guys. So we'll see.
And you got to explain to my audience,
sure,
because you're signed for $8.5 million. I think most people think, well, you deserve, your employer deserves to get your very best every second for that $8.5 million. But there is this weird thing in football where if you're a veteran,
yep,
if you don't get an extension beyond that 1 year, you don't want to go out and risk getting hurt.
And we saw this with Cam Chancellor a couple years ago, that Legion of Boom and his buddy, and he held out, Dory. He actually participated in the offseason. Then when training camp came, he held out even into the regular season, even 2 games in. So, yeah, Earl has seen, you know, basically the players handle their business in every way. And it really started with Marshawn. He was the first guy to say to Pete in his program, like, yeah, I know compete every day, but I'll compete on my terms. I'll do it when I want to do it. And when he mentions phase two, so the offseason has phase one, phase two, phase three, and then they're gone. And it's a total, I added it up, it's a total of 30 days of the entire offseason. If they take part in every day of it, there's 180 days from when their season ended to when they start training camp in late July. Yeah, I'm a geek and I added up all the days. Mm-hmm. There's 180 days. If they do everything and come to work on these voluntary days, they will have worked 30 of 180. Earl has said, nope, I'll be there three. There's only 3 mandatory days where I get fined if I'm not there.
Right.
I'm going to only work 3 of 180, and I may or may not see you in training camp. And it's just a tough place that he and the team unfortunately find themselves in, kind of like they did with Marshawn, kind of like they did with Cam, kind of like they do with veteran guys who feel like what you said, I deserve more, and I want my next extension, and I'm going in the final year of my deal. Show me the money.
But I also am a firm believer that when you have a contract, you owe your employer your very best every second. And if they're going to pay you $8.5 million, and I know in a relative sense, he says I'm worth more than that, but $8.5 million is $8.5 million, and yep, your employer deserves all of you.
Yep. And he's going to look at Odell Beckham last year, who got hurt and got injured and has not gotten his payday. You know, Earl and his representation are going to look at that. They're going to look, Dory, and this is where the Seahawks are a little bit stuck, because the precedent was to pay Michael Bennett a year early. The precedent was to pay Richard Sherman a year early. And here comes Earl looking for his third deal. Like, hey, let's go. You've done this before for the other guy. Show me. Show me the love, man. Show me the same precedent that you sent with those other guys. And I think the Seahawks are saying, nope, that was not a great deal with Cam. And that was not a great deal with Bennett to lock him into a third deal and learn their lesson.
And the speaking of Bennett, that seemed to be the other storyline of the weekend besides evaluating all these draft picks and the new guys. But everybody wanted to know about if he was Coach Carroll. And as you said, this is the first time we've had a chance to hear from him since all of those moves. And was he disappointed when on their way out of town, Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett, they made disparaging comments, talked about how the program had lost its way, that Pete's message was getting old, that Bennett allegedly was reading books in meetings, and Pete was asked about all of that?
Well, no, it didn't. Because we've just been through so much, and I know where their head is at, and they're looking at stuff, and they can go from one moment to the next and see things a little bit differently. It can change for them. And they're battling. They're out there they're battling for their own sake. Yeah, it would be nice if they saw it differently. I see it differently than they saw it.
And he said, ultimately, though, these guys better start seeing it my way.
Of course I do. Shoot, yeah, man, I'm a teacher. I got to help these guys learn. I got to do whatever it takes to get that done and get the communication right. So we're constantly tweaking. We're constantly evolving. They need to do the same. And the freshness can come from both directions. Or see you later. If it's in the right place, go. You got to go. You're out of here.
I was a little surprised at the tone there because that's not something you hear a lot from Pete.
Well, we had to work it, okay? It was a half an hour, right? It didn't start that way. He had to, this kind of got to build that into the guest and everything else. And he was not going to be petty. He said that three times. I'm not going to be petty here. I'm not going to be petty. I'm not going to be petty. I know these guys. They won me a world championship. We did it together. I would not have won a world championship in nearly a second without him.
Right.
So he is not going to throw them under the bus. He's not going to say disparaging things. But he also is going to take back the discipline in this program that, unfortunately, I think had fallen to the wayside. And you know what? You are a prime example. You've been doing your show how many years?
23 years.
And you walk in here on a Monday, and you've got the same number of articles printed out that you did last Monday, that you did a year ago. Not the same articles, but the same attention to your work. And you continue to, hey man, every day is a new day. Every month is a new month. Every year is a new year. And I've got to reinvent myself. I got to bring this energy. And your comments earlier about, hey, my company deserves the best.
Right.
And I think, unfortunately, in that business, it gets really hard to do that for those guys. In the very select few, the Peyton Mannings that I was around, Dory, for 2 years, they treated it the way you treated it. He sat in the front row in meetings. He would write the same notes of the same plays that he's run for 13 to 15 years.
Hey, look at LeBron. Look at LeBron, most physically gifted athlete. Also is probably the hardest worker on the team, and he's got his guys that put him through this grueling workout on practice days because not only is he the most physically talented, but he's also the hardest worker. That's a pretty good combo.
Yeah, and they're really hard to find. And I would put Russell in that boat. I'd put Doug Baldwin in that boat. I'd put Bobby Wagner in that boat. This team still has a core. KJ Wright is in that boat.
Yep.
You've got a core group of guys here that you're good enough to win. You know, I'm seeing all sorts of texts for the first time in a long time, Dory, when we talk about these things. People have kind of, I'm not buying. I'm not buying it. I bought it the last few years. I'm not buying it. I got to see it. I got to see some discipline. I got to see some guys just so incentivized for one another instead of, unfortunately, the last couple of years, some of the mixed messaging, I think, that came out.
I think the fresh blood was desperately needed. Okay, 30 seconds. Mariners, they're going to be a playoff team this year?
19-14, Dory. There's a split in baseball right now between the haves and the have-nots. They are not a have-not. I can say that definitively.
They are not a have-not.
Yes.
That's a double negative.
Well, you know what?
That means they're a have.
They don't. Yes, that's exactly right.
Okay. Why did
exactly
you say
right.
that, though?
Because
it's confusing me like that.
I apologize.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
so are they a playoff team? They're a wild card contender. Mm-hmm. They're not the Houston Astros. They're not the New York Yankees or the Boston Red Sox or the best teams, the haves in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They clearly have a rotation and everything else. But they're not on the other end that are tanking it, that are lost. They're gonna be competitive, and I think they showed that over the weekend.
No, I think you cannot say that they're not a have not.
That was pretty bad. I'm sorry.
All right. Brock Huard, you can hear him every morning 7 to 10 on 710 ESPN Seattle. Thanks for coming by.
We didn't even get to the catcher story.
I know.
That's so much to do.
I know.
All right.
Lots more straight ahead. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Rolls on.
Nice, Brock. Nice! On Friday's show, I was absolutely apoplectic by the story that was first broke by Channel 4. They had the video up at comonews.com, and the other stations, our news partners, Cairo, have it up now, too. But I want to give credit to the original source when we talked about it on Friday. It was the story about a guy who went into the REI store downtown, stole an ice axe, threatened store security by holding it over his head. And then when cops started pursuing this guy down the street in the middle of the afternoon, the guy occasionally would turn, and you saw this on the officer's body cam video. He would occasionally turn and hold the axe over his head. in a threatening manner toward the cops. They were warning people to get clear. Channel 4's Joel Moreno had the story.
The Seattle police footage begins inside REI, where a man had just stolen an ice axe and held it up to threaten store security, who tried to stop him.
Dude.
Police tracked him outside the store, calling for backup.
So he's been swinging, he's looking back at me, and he's holding it up like this, like he's gonna swing it at me.
But the man refused to stop or follow commands.
Drop it now!
It's on the ground!
Man, it's okay, just drop the ice axe.
I mean, they're trying desperately to do that, plus they have to keep the civilians, the citizens, just in the middle of the lunch hour, safe on the streets with a crazy guy with an ice axe.
The president of the police union says officers had limited choices.
And I talked to the police union on my show. So on it goes, this video.
Get out of the way!
It's at that point that Officer Nick Guzley joined the effort. The suspect made his way into a narrow corridor and police tried to press in, but the man held the axe over his head.
Once again, threatens the cops with this axe, and Officer Nick Guzley, he then does something absolutely heroic.
Moments later, Officer Guzley came up on the right-hand side and made the tackle.
Get on the ground! Drop it!
Beautifully done. Beautifully done. Officer Nick Guzley, I called a hero on Friday. He kind of got in this guy's blind spot, saw the opportunity, went bear hugged him, and was able to take the guy to the ground. Nobody was hurt. The guy with the ice axe was apprehended. He's in prison for robbery now, and everyone's safe. Great job, right? Except the Office of Professional Accountability is thinking about suspending that Seattle cop, Nick Guzley, for 2 days without pay for reasons that I cannot possibly fathom. And I talked to a Seattle police officer friend of mine over the weekend, and I asked, can you give me any insight as to what's going on? And they said that OPA, everybody's just scared to death of OPA. Even when it's a case of a cop doing something brave and heroic, they still have to submit this report. But it was Guzley's supervisor that recommended the suspension, leading to all sorts of speculation. Does this supervisor have some personal gripe with Officer Guzley? And it turns out my cop friend knows Officer Guzley well and tells me he is just as solid a cop as you're ever going to say. Well, we are getting word, our colleague Jason Rance, he talked to people within the department, and the early word that he is hearing is that police command is going to disagree with OPA and not pursue a suspension of this officer. And I will tell you right now, I talked with Interim Chief Carmen Best a few weeks ago at an event, and she seems like a reasonable person. If she doesn't overturn this planned suspension, then SPD has way more problems than we could possibly fathom. Fastest 15 is next.